Welcome to Two Ways Street. I'm Bill Nigut. When I was growing up, the soundtrack of my life was filled with Broadway musicals. My mother loved them. One of my earliest musical memories was listening to the original cast album of South Pacific with Mary Martin and Enzio Pinza. I can still see vividly in my mind the cover art on the box that those 78 RPM records came in. It was the music of Rodgers and Hammerstein that I heard most often in our house. Oklahoma, The King and I, Carousel. I was probably 11 when Mom took me to see the original production of Sound of Music on Broadway. It was dazzling to see Mary Martin, the great star of the 50s and 60s, the woman who played Peter Pan on NBC TV, live on stage. I still love Rodgers and Hammerstein. Who doesn't? But I declared my musical independence from my mother when I discovered Stephen Sondheim. His music was smart and sophisticated, and he took on themes far more daring than traditional Broadway musicals. And the show that introduced me to Sondheim was Company.
Late nights, quick bites, party games, deep talks, long walks, telephone calls. Thoughts shared, souls bared, private names, all those photos up on the walls. With love, with love, filling the days. With love, 70 ways, Kabobby with love.
Company has a long and fabled history. When it opened on Broadway in April of 1970, it startled many theatergoers because it broke nearly all of the conventions of the traditional Broadway musical. It didn't have a linear narrative storyline. It was a series of vignettes that took place in an instant in the mind of the central character, Bobby. As we meet him, he's celebrating his 35th birthday, and to the dismay of his close friends, he remains unattached. In the time it takes Bobby to blow out the candles on his cake, the entire show unfolds. Company is an examination of the frustrations and joys of marriage, as Sondheim explained in a conversation recorded in 1995.
This was 1969 when we wrote this, and it was produced in 1970, and it was the end of that era where such things as the traditional notion of marriage was breaking down, the notion of personal commitment, the sexual freedom of the 60s, all of that was coming together and informing this piece. So the idea of a piece about commitment and non-commitment and fear of commitment, emotional commitment, seemed appropriate.
Critics were lukewarm about the show at the time, and yet Company went on to win the Tony Award for Best Musical in 1971. Sondheim won the Tony for Best Music and Lyrics, George Firth for The Book, and Harold Prince for Best Director. More than 40 years later, Company has been revived countless times on Broadway, in London, and in regional theaters across the United States. And now, Atlanta's Actors Express has mounted a new production of the show, which is now running in their West Side Theater. On a recent day off from rehearsals, Company director Freddie Ashley, music director Allie Lingenfelter, actor Lowry Brown, who plays Bobby, and Libby Whitmore, one of Atlanta's most beloved cabaret singers, came into the Two Way Street studio to talk about the show. We're going to hear Libby sing her character's signature number from Company, The Ladies Who Lunch, and later in the show, Libby and Lowry will sing a couple of their favorite songs from other Sondheim musicals. We'll play music from some of the other well-known productions of Company. I started by asking Freddie Ashley to describe Company in his own words.
Well, it's about a young man, Bobby, who's turning 35. All of his friends are married couples. His interactions with them and they're sort of pressing him to commit and find a nice young girl to settle down with, and his seeming inability to do so. And we also meet three of his girlfriends along the way and see sort of some of the various ways in which he's had difficulty in settling down or committing.
Lowry, the show opens with Bobby coming into a birthday party, his 35th birthday party, right? What What are you doing with that character as your friends all gather for that party? And how do you see Bobby's arc throughout the show?
For me, the arc is definitely a self-discovery. I was going through the script a couple of weeks ago, and the word that kept coming up to me for Bobby was afraid, fear. There's something happened to Bobby at some point that turned him off to marriage, to commitment.
The song, really, at the beginning of the show, Libby, you play Joanne, who yes. is one of the great characters in musical theater.
True.
You're already at the very beginning of the show setting up for us the fact that Bobby is the fifth wheel or the third wheel, essentially.
Right.
What's the song?
Company.
Company.
Yeah, Company.
So let's listen to a little of that opening number from the original Broadway production of Company.
Bobby.
Bobby, baby.
Bobby, Bobby.
Robbie.
Robbie,
darling.
Bobby, they've been trying
Bobby.
To call
Bobby,
you.
Baby.
Bobby, Bobby.
And you have got
Bravo.
Something to tell.
Bobby, love.
Bobby, honey.
Bobby, we've been trying.
Darling.
Bobby, baby.
Love it.
Kids were asking Bobby, Bobby. There was something we wanted to say.
What's happening in that number is
they all want a piece of Bobby.
They all want a piece of Bobby, and they're all units, and Bobby is this separate island. So there's this swirl of activity around him,
right.
but he's still very separate, and that's really what the number is setting up. Sondheim actually talks about the way he constructed the song and the rhyme scheme of the song was to sort of metaphorically symbolize Bobby's solitude and Bobby's separateness.
Sondheim, in talking about this show, said that much after it had already opened, after it had been written and had been on stage, he found a quote from Chekhov that he thought really said a lot about what Company is, because it is the story of married couples and how they relate. You know the quote?
Oh, yeah. I'm paraphrasing, but if you really want to know what loneliness feels like, get married.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And he said that if he had found that quote before he wrote the show, he probably never would have written the show.
Really?
Yeah.
So it is a show about how married couples interact, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, I always thought, too, there was a... And this is my own personal take on it, but I always felt, too, that there's also the sense of we want you to be as miserable as we are. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, I think Larry and Joanne, I think they're a perfect couple. I think they'll probably stay married forever. But not everything is peaches and cream. And there's a song that the guys sing, you know, what do you want to get married for? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's that envy from the husbands with Bobby having girlfriends coming in and out and all this kind of stuff. I think married people sometimes do that when they have single friends. It's like, why is your life so much better than mine? Why don't you get married and settle down?
You know, Libby, your character in the song Little Things We Do Together,
right.
which is about you and your husband, Larry. You're describing your relationship as usual. Bobby is the observer. But I think Joanne has one of the great lines in that song. The concerts you enjoy together, neighbors
you annoy together,
children
you destroy together.
That yeah. keeps marriage
that keeps
intact.
Marriage intact. Yes.
Children you
yeah.
destroy
But, you
together.
Know, I don't think she's... I think in that instance, she's not just commenting on her marriage. She's commenting on all the couples.
It's not so hard to be married. It's much
the simplest of
lives. It's not so hard to be married.
I've done it 3 or 4 times.
It's people that you hate together.
Hate together.
That makes marriage a joy.
It's like using horse together. Shouting kill your horse together.
Getting a divorce together.
That makes perfect relationships.
Sondheim points out that song has a lot of very high treble plinks on the piano. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the story of why that happened? Do you know this story?
I know the story. It's
tell
a great
Elliot
story.
And the rest of us the story.
Sondheim was on a ship traveling across the Atlantic.
It was a transatlantic liner to take material to Harold Prince.
To Harold Prince, who was shooting a movie in Europe. And he got a studio suite that had a piano in it. And the ship kept listing starboard.
He was sliding down the piano.
He was sliding down the piano. And it was this wonderful accident.
It's amazing where genius comes from. Isn't it, though?
I would swear that it's an apocryphal story, except that Sondheim tells it himself.
Yeah. Libby, you have, in some ways, the most wonderful role you could possibly want in Company, and also probably the most daunting challenge.
It is. It's a matter of fact, I was doing the Libby's at the Express in March, and it was before the show, and Freddie was upstairs, and he was saying, oh, we've almost decided on the new season. I'm so excited. And I think the first show we're going to do is Company. And without even thinking, I went, oh, can I audition for Joanne? I mean, I just blurted that out. And he was so funny. He said, well, I would love for you to, but it never occurred to me to ask you because I know you really don't like Sondheim. And I said, but I like working and I like singing Sondheim. I don't know what made me blurt that out. And as a matter of fact, I didn't tell anybody that I was auditioning for the role because everybody would have said to me, oh, you're perfect for that. And how embarrassed I would have been had I not been cast.
So
I didn't tell anybody until I knew I had been cast.
I apologize for interrupting. So why is it such a challenge to play Joanne? And then who is Joanne?
Well, it's a challenge because, I mean, I can only speak from my position. It's a challenge because the original production, Elaine Stritch, was so iconic. And I know that there was a lot of ups and downs with her in working with her. And we all have heard horror stories about working with Elaine Stritch. But on stage, in that show, in that character, to me, it's the ultimate performance.
Who is Joanne? What is Joanne all about?
My sense of who she is that she's very happily married but doesn't want anybody to know that she is.
She's a cynic?
I think so, very much so. I think she's a cynic. I think ultimately she would not have it any other way. She loves Larry. I think he's perfect. His temperament is perfect for her. I think personally they may be one of the best matched couples in the entire show. That's just my opinion. I think they're so meshed together and the yin and the yang of the two of them is so great.
She drinks too much.
Yes.
Sondheim.
Is that wrong?
You're going to share with us in a moment the song that lives today is one of the great songs in musical theater, The Ladies Who Lunch.
No pressure. Thank you, Bill.
But Sondheim says he not only wrote the song Ladies Who Lunch for Stritch, he created the character based on a lady.
Well, see,
Stritch.
And that's what I'm thinking about. To me, it's the ultimate performance. So how do you make Joanne as wonderful as Elaine Stritch did without just doing Elaine Stritch?
That is the exercise. You approach the work as if you've never heard it before. And that doesn't mean redefine the show. It doesn't mean try to improve upon the show, because I'd be mighty presumptuous to try to improve on Sondheim. But what it means is try to erase our preconceived notions about the show. And I always believe in approaching work from the inside out, from looking at the character's internal life and working with the particular actor to embody it in a way that only that actor can. Libby's performance as Joanne will be singularly Libby's, just as Elaine Stritch's was singularly Elaine Stritch's. And I think that's the beauty of theater and the beauty of a show that is open enough and strong enough to stand up to reinterpretation over the years.
Libby Sondheim tells a story. One of the things that led him to that song was, you know, the story, George Firth went out to have a drink at like 2 a.m. with Elaine Stritch at a New York bar. And he says
so it was an early night for her.
Yeah, for her early night. And he says they walked in and the bartender asked her what she wanted. And she said, just bring me a bottle of vodka and a floor plan. We're okay. So delighted that you are willing to sing live for us, Ladies
I know.
Who
what
lunch.
Was I thinking?
Is there anything we need to set up this song before you sing it? Where are they?
They're in a nightclub, and it's
Bobby and
it's Bobby Elaine. And Larry and Joanne, and they've been out for the evening, and they're sort of winding up at a nightclub, and Joanne has had a few drinks, and that's the scene where she sort of explains her marriage, explains her life, and Larry goes off and leaves, and I don't want to give too much away, but you know, this leads her into singing about her situation and her life,
and commenting on
the
empty lives of the women who she socializes with.
Exactly, she's in that circle, but at the same time, she's outside of that circle, commenting on the women that are in that circle, even though she's one of them.
So here's one of the greatest songs in musical theater, and we're so lucky to have Libby Whittemore perform it for us.
Ready? Yes.
Here's to the ladies who lunch. Everybody laugh. Lounging in their caftans and planning a brunch on their own behalf. Off to the gym, then to a fitting, claiming their fat and looking grim, 'cause they've been sitting, choosing a hat. Does anyone still wear a hat? I'll drink to that. And here's to the girls who stay smart. Aren't they a gas? Rushing to their classes in optical art, wishing it would pass. Another long, exhausting day. Another $1,000. A matinee, a Pinter play. Perhaps a piece of Mahler. I'll drink to that. And one for Mahler. And here's to the girls who play wife. Aren't they too much? Keeping house but clutching a copy of Life just to keep in touch. The ones who follow the rules and meet themselves at the schools, too busy to know that they're fools. Aren't they a gem? I'll drink to them. Let's all drink to them. And here's to the girls who just watch. Aren't they the best? When they get depressed, it's a bottle of scotch plus a little jest. Another chance to disapprove. Another brilliant singer. Another reason not to move. Another vodka stinger. Drink to that. So here's to the girls on the go. Everybody tries. Look into their eyes and you'll see what they know. Everybody dies. A toast to that invincible bunch. The dinosaurs surviving the crunch. Let's hear it for the ladies who lunch. Everybody rise.
That's Libby Whittemore who plays Joanne in the Actors Express production of Company. She was accompanied by the show's music director, Allie Lingenfelter. We'll take a break now, and in a moment, we'll continue our exploration of Company with the cast and artistic team of the Actors Express production of the show. Welcome back to Two-Way Street. I'm Bill Nigut. We're talking today about the Actors Express production of Company, which is now running at the group's theater on Atlanta's West Side. My guests are cast members Lowry Brown, who plays the central character Bobby, and Libby Whitmore, who plays the featured role of Joanne. We're also talking with the show's director, Freddie Ashley, and musical director, Allie Lingenfelter, one of the married friends of Bobby, who are trying to convince him that at 35 years old, it's time for him to find a nice girl and settle down. George Firth, who wrote the book for the show, originally wrote 11 different short one-act plays about 11 different married couples. And right. Nobody knew what to do with it until Harold Prince took a look at it and said to Sondheim, we ought to turn this into a musical and we'll create this character, Bobby, who will be the observer of all these relationships. But here's what's interesting about that. Sondheim says he knew nothing about love and marriage because by 1970, he'd still not ever had a long-term relationship. He never felt he was really in love. That didn't come until much later in his life. Do you know where he turned to learn about marriage? He went to Mary Rogers.
Oh, right. One of his best friends, author of Once Upon a Mattress.
And daughter of the great, great Richard.
Richard Rogers. Right. And in fact, she and her husband are name-checked in the show.
I didn't
There's
know
There's a
that.
Line about Hank and Mary are coming over or something. I forget which song it's in.
Too. Oh, I love that.
But yeah, he gives them a little shout-out in the show.
Allie, what does it mean to be the music director of a show like Company? What's your role?
I get to simultaneously try to teach the actors what's on the page while I'm figuring out how I want it to sound in my head, while then conveying that to my musicians, while all the while still trying to lend to that discovery process and helping my actors not get overwhelmed with what is actually on the page to the point to where they can't figure out how to develop a character. So these first couple of days that we've had just music rehearsals really has just been, here's how this goes. I'm going to teach it to you. And then you take it from here and you learn it so you feel comfortable with it and then kind of turn it into what you want to give an audience on stage. So I kind of wear different hats at different points over these next few weeks.
Sondheim is notoriously difficult for some singers to grapple with in some of his songs. Like, for instance, in this show, Not Getting Married Today is a rush, a rush of words and not very many rhymes because he intentionally didn't want it to rhyme because he wanted to show the character's chaos on the day that she was getting married. When Company was revived in London back in 1995, Sophie Thompson sang this song.
Listen, everybody, look, I don't know what you're waiting for. A wedding, what's a wedding? It's a prehistoric ritual where everybody promises fidelity forever, which is maybe the most horrifying word I ever heard, which is followed by a honeymoon where suddenly he realizes he's saddled with a nut and wants to kill me, which he should. Thanks so much, but I'm not getting married. Go have lunch, because I'm not getting married. You've been grand, but I'm not getting married. Don't just stand there, I'm not getting married. And don't tell Paul, but I'm not getting married today. Go, can't you go? Why is nobody listening? Goodbye, go and cry at another person's wake. If you're quick for a kick, you could pick up a christening. But please, on my knees, there's a human life at stake. Listen, everybody, I'm afraid you didn't hear it. You want to see a crazy lady pull up in front of you. It isn't only Paul, maybe ruining his life. No one thought it was me losing our identities. I tell Paul my analyst about it, and he said, see you Monday. But by Monday, I've been floating in the Hudson with the other garbage. I'm not well, so I'm not getting married. You've been swell, but I'm not getting married. Kill the hogs, I'm not getting married.
Tell us a little about that song, and how hard is it to work with the performer playing that part to be able to attack that song and get it right?
It's one of my favorite songs in the show. I tend to relate a little bit with Amy because I'm frantic and I speak quickly and I move quickly in everything that I do. And everybody's like, chill out all the time. You know, I just, that's the kind of person I am. And when I invest in something, I dive in all the way and then get cold feet later. And so her character is really entertaining to me. And Freddie and I got really lucky, and the others involved in the casting process, to find a character who really embodies the character of Amy.
Yeah, Jessica Mizell is the actress playing Amy, and when she came into the audition, we had a lot of really great auditions for that part. It's such a coveted role, you know, in musical theater. And so everyone who was auditioning for it was really bringing their A game. And then Jessica walked into the room, and of course she had everything memorized already, and she had made such strange acting choices in her delivery of it that were all gorgeous. I mean, they were just so delightfully quirky and weird, but yet fully motivated and fully embodied. And when she walked out of the rehearsal room, I turned to the casting director and to Allie and a couple of other staff members who were present. And I just said, that was like opening night ready. Oh, it was wow. It was one of the best auditions I've ever seen.
Probably the most famous song that Stephen Sondheim has ever cut from an original production of his was a song called Marry Me a Little, mm-hmm. which Bobby sang as the show was being developed as the end of the first act, I think, right, Freddie?
Yes, and that's where it is now. It's gone through a couple of different permutations, this show, and that song has played a couple of different roles, if you will, in the show in terms of how and why he's singing it.
So it was cut because the show was running over 3 hours long, right, when they were first getting set to go into preview, and the song was cut. But many productions subsequently have put it back in. Are you singing Marry Me a Little?
Yeah, as of now, there's no intent in cutting it from the show.
Here's Raul Esparza singing Marry Me a Little from a Broadway revival of the show.
Marry me a little, love me just enough, warm and sweet and easy, just the simple stuff. Keep a tender distance, so we'll both be free. That's the way it ought to be. I'm ready, marry me a little, body, heart and soul, passionate as hell, but always in control. Want me first and foremost, keep me company, that's the way it ought to be.
Why did you decide to put it back in?
It's a great song. One of the reasons it ends the first act so beautifully, Bobby is sort of left in having a sort of existential crisis and is examining his inability to connect, really. And I think that the song's placement in the show by closing Act One sort of ends Act One on an emotionally grounded place.
Yeah.
And allows then the journey to pick back up, and we see, okay, he is actually having some movement here. There's something mm-hmm. inside that he is actively grappling with.
And I think it's indicative of where Bobby is at this point in the play. You know, at the beginning of the play, he's hiding. You know, he's hiding with it by constantly being at parties or in groups and everything. And for the first time, he really is. He starts off the song joking, you know, with this halfway, hey, marry me a little, you know, and he's describing these relationships. But then the music, even the piano and the orchestration takes a turn into this smoother dreamlike phrasing. And that's when Bobby probably unintentionally falls into himself and really starts to fantasize what it could be like if he did give in and he did try and really went for it. And the rest of that song is him playing with giving into it. And but it's still terrifying. It's still terrifying. Yeah. He's not ready for that jump. You know, I mean, that's another thing that keeps going on in the script. He keeps saying, "I'm ready, I'm ready, I'm ready, I'm ready." and he's not. I think it's Jenny who just bluntly is like, "You're not ready.
You're not ready."
And it's not till the end of the show that I think he's ready to step off of that ledge.
Freddie, let's talk about another 100 people. Why is it in there? What's the story behind it?
Well, why it's in there is a pretty interesting story, because it has everything to do with the actress who played Marta, the character who sings it in the original production, Pamela Myers. The character of Marta was one of Bobby's girlfriends. She was originally written to be a New Yorker, Jewish, very streetwise, funny, sharp-witted. And they weren't finding an actress that they really liked for the part. And in walks Pamela Myers, fresh off the bus from Ohio with no experience.
She's like 19 years old.
Yeah. And she sings two songs for them in the audition, a comic song and a dramatic song. And they flip. And they, you know, I think Harold Prince asked Sondheim, you know, can you write for her? And so they decided to cast her in the part and recraft the character to suit her. And then they wrote the song Another 100 People, which is, you know, maybe the only song in the show that's actually not about relationships in a way.
Okay, well, let's listen to Pamela Myers singing the song that Stephen Sondheim wrote specifically for her.
Another 100 people just got off of the train and came up through the ground line. Another 100 people just got off of the bus and are looking around at. Another 100 people who got off of the plane and are looking at us who got off of the train and the plane and the bus maybe yesterday. It's a city of strangers. Some come to work, some to play. A city of strangers. Some come to stare, some to stay. And every day.
And it was a showstopper moment, and of course, it almost got cut out of town. It was cut after the first preview, and Sondheim was despondent about it, and he figured out a way, because, again, the show was running through.
But it
hours.
Is about relationship. It's about the relationship to the city of New York.
That's exactly right.
Well, right.
From somebody, you know, like from Mars, totally different from New York, coming in and
that's a great point, Libby. In a way, that song was Pam Myers' story. Here's this young
exactly.
girl comes to New York and is confronted by another 100
right.
people and another 100 people getting off of the train.
The train
right?
and the bus. And, you know, to me, it's because when I first heard Company, I was in high school. I'd been to New York to visit and see Broadway shows. I was lucky enough to do that my junior and senior year. But that's sort of, if you're not from New York, and if you're young, which Pamela Myers was and Marta's character is, it is sort of, that's what I always thought of when I thought of New York, was that song. As an outsider, as somebody who doesn't live there, who didn't live there, to me, that song just summed up the entire city. Just fast and busy and so many people and not really connecting. And because I'm from Atlanta, where, yeah. you know, you smile and nod and say hey to a stranger if you're on the street. In New York, not so much.
Lowry, so I want to talk to you briefly about your big number, which is being alive.
Mm. Out of his subconscious comes this declaration of what he really wants in life.
And what does he want?
To take care of someone. And that is his foundation that he has been hiding from and afraid of his whole life. And it's the moment where he takes the step off that ledge, we hope, and begins to really explore what his life is going to be like when he makes that choice.
Freddie, as a director, what's that moment, that change like for you? I mean, Sondheim initially had a different song that Bobby sang, and it was a very cynical and very depressing song.
Right.
And Prince said to him, you can't close the show with it. But Sondheim's fear was, well, how do we make this happen and make the audience buy it? How do you do
that? Well, the turn happens in the song, and so Sondheim did that in the actual writing of the song because he's so smart. And he switches tenses halfway through the song.
Yeah, same
the
lyrics.
Song, the
same
song
lyrics.
Starts out with, you know, someone to do these things. And then the song switches to...
Please someone.
Please someone do this.
Yeah.
He switches to speaking in second person, you know, the... You please kind of...
He's asking for it. And in the first half of the song, he is complaining about these circumstances, and then by the end, he is asking someone.
And Sondheim refers to the second half of the song as a prayer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please, he's to the universe, like somebody, please do this for me. Is what I mean. It is so much of a prayer.
Because of a union rule, we can't ask you to sing a song from the show.
Very true.
But Bobby says, "Somebody hold me too close. Somebody hurt me too deep, and then
somebody sit in my chair and ruin my sleep."
And make me aware
of being alive. He's acknowledging that he hasn't been living. He has been a shell.
So let's listen to just a little bit of Dean Jones, who played the original Bobby, singing Being Alive in the 1970 production.
Someone to crown you with love. Someone to force you to care. Someone to make you come through. Will always be there, as frightened as you of being alive. Being alive. Being alive. Being alive.
Blow out the candles, Robert, and make a wish.
We're going to take a break now, but when we come back, we have a real treat for you. Lowry Brown and Libby Whitmore will sing for us two more Sondheim songs that they picked just for our show. This is Two Way Street. We're talking today about Stephen Sondheim and his seminal musical Company, which is on stage now at Atlanta's Actors Express Theater. When we invited cast members Lowry Brown and Libby Whitmore to be our guests, we'd asked them if they'd like to choose a couple of favorite songs from other Sondheim shows to sing in our studio. Lowry Brown chose a song from a show that Sondheim's been trying to perfect for a decade or more. It's never had a Broadway run. It's had a couple of different titles, including Bounce and Roadshow. So here's Lowry Brown, accompanied by Ali Lingenfelter, singing the Sondheim song, Talent.
When I was a tyke, I said what I like is art. I know I'm a boy, but what I enjoy is art. Looking at paintings, going to plays, music and books informing my days, filling my mind, flooding my heart with art. I had this dream of becoming an artist, a painter, a poet, who knows. I had a nice little talent for drawing and a natural talent for prose. I even began to compose. So many talents, wasn't I blessed? All of them good, a few of them better, none of them best. Just enough talent to know that I hadn't the talent. So I put my dream and my self-esteem to rest. I couldn't decide, then one day I spied Palm Beach. Speck on the map, no more than a gap. Palm Beach, jungle and seashore, muddy and raw. But in a flash, I suddenly saw what it would take, what I couldn't make. Palm Beach, I had this dream of a city of artists, Versailles by the Florida Sea, a sort of world congregation of artists, all encouraged to set themselves free. I knew what I wanted to be. I'd be their host and supporter, the patron saint of the things that they write and compose and paint. I shall wander among them with lavish praise as they carve their statues, construct their plays, design their buildings, recite their rhymes, making modern art fit for modern times. So many talents gathered en masse. Painters and poets, artists and dreamers watered like grass. And if the talent I have is for nurturing talent, then succeed or fail, I will see they sail first class. And my father can go stick it up his ass.
That's Lowry Brown singing Talent from Stephen Sondheim's show Bounce. It's such a thrill to have you all here, and I'm very grateful for you to that you were able to come in and be part of this show. Libby, you've offered, again, very graciously, to send us out with one of his most beautiful songs of all, which is?
Send in the Clowns from A Little Night Music.
We're going to listen to you, Libby, as we thank you again for being here for Two-Way Street.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you in midair. Send in the clowns. Isn't it bliss? Don't you approve? One who keeps tearing around, one who can't move. And where are the clowns? Send in the clowns. Just when I'd stopped opening doors, finally knowing the one that I wanted was yours. Making my entrance again with my usual flair. Sure of my lines, no one is there. Don't you love farce? My fault, I fear. I thought that you'd want what I want. Sorry, my dear. But where are the clowns? Quick, send in the clowns. Don't bother, they're here. Isn't it rich? Isn't it queer? Losing my timing this late in my career. Where are the clowns? There ought to be clowns. Well, maybe next year.
That's Libby Whitmore singing Stephen Sondheim's Send in the Clowns. If you'd like to learn more about the Actors Express production of Company, we've posted information on the Two-Way Street website at gpb.org/TWS and on our Facebook page. We've also posted a video of Libby when she sang Send in the Clowns in our studio. After Company, Stephen Sondheim went on to write some of the most fabled musicals in 20th century theater. Follies, A Little Night Music, Pacific Overtures, Sweeney Todd, Into the Woods, Merrily We Roll Along, and more. And at age 86, he's working on still another show. Those of us who love his work can hardly wait. One more note about Sondheim. He wrote so insightfully about the dynamics of marriage and the pain of being alone in company, but he didn't find love himself until he was 61 years old. Sondheim lived with dramatist Peter Jones until 1999 when they broke up, but he subsequently met and fell in love with Jeff Bromley, 32 years younger than he, but the person Sondheim says is the joy of his life and the man who keeps him company.
Okay now, everybody, is that it warm? Isn't it rosy, side by side?
Before we leave you today, we have an update to our show of last week. If you were with us, you heard our conversation with the acclaimed poet and essayist Kevin Young, who lives in Decatur and has been on the faculty of Emory University. Just a few days after we aired our show, Kevin was announced as the new director of the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture in Harlem. It's an arm of the New York Public Libraries. Kevin was described in the announcement as one of the country's most distinguished curators and writers. The center's a leading repository for African and African-American life, history, and culture, and seems like a perfect fit for the man we profiled last week. Our congratulations to Kevin, and by the way, to his wife, Kate Tuttle. You may recall she's been a guest on Two-Way Street, sharing with us some of the favorite books that she's reviewed for the Boston Globe and other publications. We're out of time for this week's show. Remember, if you can't listen to us when we're on the radio, you can always subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or go to our website to find our audio archives at gpb.org/TWS. Our senior producer and the woman who put this show together so beautifully today is Jenny Ament. Our producer is Trevor Young. Our intern is Hannah Rose Adams. I'm Bill Nigut. Thanks so much for being with us today. Hope to see you again next week for another Two-Way Street.